We're holding on Kuflamet Zayin Omud Beis, four lines from the bottom. We've been talking about the various dinim involving matanos, so now continuing on a different type of thing within that topic. Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, rather. Hakosev nechosev la'echad. If a person writes out his nechosim that he's giving them to somebody else, we're talking about a matnas bori, we can be talking about a matnas shchimra, whatever. The pashtus may not make a difference, but whatever. The Rashbam points out actually that if you have the word kol over here, a kos of kol nechos of lacher, then it would have to be necessarily we're talking about a matnas shchimra, because we're going to talk about in the next perek that if a shchiv merah gives away only some of his nechosim, then it's irrevocable, as opposed to when a shchiv merah gives all of them, then it's revocable. If he recovers, then he gets them all back, because the reason he gave them away was because he figured he's about to die, and therefore if he doesn't, then he gets them all back, because implicitly there was that condition. If he gives out only some of them, then it's fully effective, and he can never take it back, because then obviously he didn't give it away because he's about to die. Why did he leave himself anything? Anyway, so here you have Kosev Nechosev La'achar, so he wrote out a shtar giving his Nechosim to somebody else. There is actually a discussion of Rishonim, whether we're talking about a Matnas Shchiv Merah or whether we're also talking about a Matnas Bari. The receiver, the Makabel, said, I don't want them. Now he might not want them because, for example, the Rashbam points out there's a pasuk that says "Sona matonas yichya," a person who hates gifts will live. So therefore he wants to be in that category. So he says, I don't want them. Kona, then we say he's still kona them. Even if he says Rabbi Yehuda Amash in the name of Shmuel, that even if the guy is standing there and screaming and saying I don't want them, he's still kona them. And that would mean, among other things, that if he himself has a Baal Chayv to whom he owes money, then that Baal Chayv is going to be able to collect from that. Why Shmuel would hold that way, we'll see soon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo Kona. Rabbi Yochanan says he's not kona. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Memo V'lo Pligi. So Rabbi Abba Bar Memo points out they're not actually really arguing, because it depends on two different circumstances. Kan B'tzeveach Me'ikra. Rabbi Yochanan is talking about where he's crying and where he's protesting in the first place. As soon as he hears that this guy wants to give him, he right away protests and says, I don't want it. You can't be mezaka to a person bal korcha. You can be mezaka to a person when it's not in his when it's not in his presence, but you can't cause him a choiv when it's not in his presence. And here, For him to receive a gift which he doesn't want, for as far as he's concerned, would be a choiv. The Ketzos actually points out, there's a difference between we do have the concept that you can give a matana to a person not in his presence on the grounds of zochen la'adam shalei b'fana. But the point is, we're explaining over here why would he not want to receive it, and the point is, once he says that it's a choiv for him, then that's it. Ein chavin la'adam shalei b'fana. Can be shoysik me'ikra lo v'soif tzavach. Whereas Shmuel is talking about where first he accepted it quietly, and then later on he protested. So now, once he received it already, then that's it. He received it. So now he doesn't have the ability to take it out of his rishus by saying, I don't want it. He would have to explicitly give it to somebody else or be mafker it. Now, in the case of Tzeveach Me'ikra, where he protested to begin with, the Rashbam brings on the basis of a Gemara in Krisus, that what would happen is that it would become hefker. He's the noisin doesn't get it back because he gave it as a matana. The makabel doesn't receive it because he was tzeveach meikra. He protested to begin with, and that means that he didn't get it. Therefore it becomes hefker. It doesn't return to the original giver, and it doesn't stay by the recipient either. That's what the Rashbam says. Tosfos discusses that point in some detail and compares and contrasts our Gemara with the one with the Gemara in Krisus, and discusses this point, incidentally, very, very interestingly, in the middle of the Tosfos. The last line, the narrow lines, you have something v'od kosha la Rav Rabbeinu Peter. The Rav Rabbeinu Peter asks a question on it. He's one of the Balei HaTosfos. You find him here and there in Tosfos, but he's worth highlighting because of his somewhat unusual name. And there, I mean, Peter Papastros comes from the name Peter, but there is actually an old there is actually an old sefer that that claims that Peter, famously one of Yoshka's Talmidim, was actually sent as a double agent by the Chachamim to pretend to try to guide the new religion, and meanwhile he's going to steer them away from Yiddishkeit and steer them away from mitzvahs so that more Jews don't get entrapped in it, and they call them Peter in token that he patered them from mitzvahs. So they've given that, then it might be that that Jews considered this a valid name to use, since after all, the according to that story, he really was working on behalf of the Chachamim, and he was a faithful Yid. Some say he even composed, some say that this Peter Shimon was his original name. Some say he even composed Nishmas, although I think Rashi disagrees with that. In any case, the point is, apparently Jews in the times of the Baalei HaTosfos considered Peter, that is to say, a valid Jewish name, and so here we have one of the Baalei HaTosfos bearing that name. Anyway, the Gemara ends up explaining that, not Gemara, Tosfos rather, ends up explaining that no, if he refuses the gift altogether at the beginning, then it would go back to the original giver. What the Gemara says there in Krisus, that it becomes hefker. So here the Rashbam is saying, if he protested to begin with, it becomes hefker, and if he received it, then if he actually received it and then protested, then for it to become, to go out of his rishus, he would have to explicitly give it to somebody else or explicitly be mafker it. Tosfos is saying, no, if he refused it to begin with, then it doesn't become hefker, it returns to the original owner. If he does protest it afterwards, if he does protest it afterwards, then we're saying that he needs to, then he would need to give it away, or then we would say actually that kol hakodim zocha, once he says, now after having received it, I don't want it, then we would say that's reason enough, since he said he received it, then it goes to him, it doesn't return to the original giver, but at that point, since he says I don't want it, it would become hefker. Anyway, so there you have, so here we have then again that Shmuel is saying then that in the, so Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan then are not disagreeing with each other, but they're talking about two different scenarios, whether he gets it at all or whether he gets it and then he has to, according to the Rashbam, he has to now do something to be mafker it, or according to Tosfos, he doesn't because he was Tzeveach afterwards and therefore implicitly it becomes hefker. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Nachman Yitzchok Zikoloyaide Acher. Now, if the giver was mezaka to him through somebody else, and it was in his presence. So, in other words, let's say we are talking about a shivmera. So he turns to Reuven and says that here's a shtar that says that I want to give the I'm mezaka to you this shtar that Shimon is going to acquire such and such property from me, and Shimon was there and he didn't say anything, or there was a kinyan sudr and he didn't say anything, and then all of a sudden was shosak, so he was quiet. All of a sudden tzavach, later on when they came to give him the shtar, he protested. Then that would be subject. What happens then would be subject to a machlokas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Rabbanan. The Tanya, namely the machlokas, is as follows. Now, yesterday we learned a machlokas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Rabbanan, but that was on a whole different matter. Here we're talking about a different issue. The Tanya, a person writes out a shtar that he's giving his nechosim to somebody else. Now, let's say that the assets that are listed in the shtar included avodim. Now, he's saying, therefore, he's tzeveach, he's protesting because he doesn't want to have the bother of feeding, he doesn't want to have the bother of and the expense of feeding them. The Rashbam points out in a few places in Shas, you have a discussion whether a person who has an Eved Kanani is required to support him financially, or whether he can tell the Eved, listen, you're a semi-Jew because you've accepted on yourself some mitzvahs. You go around and beg for tzedakah, and people will give you tzedakah just like they would give to a regular Yid. So there's a discussion about that in the Gemara in several places. The halacha is he could say that, not necessarily is it going to remain long term like that, of course, because the Eved more likely is going to say, then what do I need to be an Eved to this guy for? I may as well run away. But in any case, Beis Din doesn't have to get involved in that. But even so, the Rashbam points out, you know, a person doesn't necessarily want to do that. So therefore, he'd rather protest and say, I don't want the Eved in the first place. So we have a shtar, or we have whatever it is that says that he's receiving this Eved. The shtar was written out. It was given to Reuven to give to Shimon. When Shimon receives it, then he protests. And now you have a machlokas of Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. So again, a kosev nechosav la'achar. A person writes out a document that is nechosav. I'm going to go to somebody else. V'hoyu behen avodim. And there are. And there were avodim among them. V'omer alo yefshi behen. And the recipient says, I don't want them. So what happens? Im hoya rabban sheni koyin. Suppose that that second master, namely the recipient of the gift, Shimon, in our scenario, suppose that he's a koyin. Harei lo uchlin betruma. Then these slaves would be able to eat truma because he is koyin of them. And we know that the avodim knanim of a koyin are able to eat truma. So in other words, he was koyin, and that's that. What happens after that? He decides he doesn't want these avodim. Fine, he's going to go sell them to somebody else or do whatever. But until then, the Tanakama says that he's able to eat truma. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, but Reb Shimon Gamliel says no. Kivin Shomar Lo Yefshi Behen. Once he says I don't want them, Kvaz Zochu Behen Yoshin. Then the heirs of the original giver are going to be zoche in them, which means actually that Rashbam says doesn't strictly speaking mean that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying the heirs of the first one. It means in other words either the original person who gave it or his yoshim. It depends whether he's alive or dead. In other words, the Rashbam says.
Dead or alive.
So in other words, the giver wrote out a document saying I'm giving my property to somebody else. So it depends whether so is he alive now or is he dead? Yeah. So one way or the other, either he or his heirs will get it back. The point is that Rashbam says Reb Shimon Gamliel disagrees with the concept that we said before, that if the guy says I don't want it, then it becomes hefker, where again the Rashbam had learned that if he says I don't want it to begin with, then it becomes hefker. And if he says later on I don't want it, then he has to say that he's mafker it. So Reb Shimon Gamliel would disagree with that concept and say that no, it doesn't become hefker. It means that it goes back to the original giver. Again, according to the long discussion in Tosfos, it may not be necessary to say that. You could say that that Reb Shimon Gamliel would all, that both the Tanakhama and Reb Shimon Gamliel would agree that if he protested originally, but again, the whole point is that now he's protesting when he first receives the document, which was given through somebody else. So that's, we have
like
to one second. So yeah, like a get.
Or,
but wait, that's the point. In other words, the Gemara is going to work it out now. So now we discuss that when we bring that braisa, we discuss it. There's a sugya on this topic in Masechta Krisus of all places, because the Gemara deals over there with certain dinim in terms of korbanos that a person might bring on behalf of somebody else and things like that. So and cases where a person thought he was chayev in a certain korban and it turns out that he's not. So the Gemara ends up talking over there a whole sugya about these dinim momenos over here, about when a person gives a matana and the other one refuses it. Anyway, so Vahvinan Ba, so we have a discussion about that. The Tanakama, Afilo Oimid Vitseveach. Are you telling me the Tanakama would say that he's koina the slave, even if he's standing there and protesting that he doesn't want? How can you give a person a matana against his will? So the matana tzichya, as the Rashbam had said before, yeah. So Omar Rava, v'itema Rabbi Yochanan. So Rava, or some say Rabbi Yochanan, says, but seveach me'ikroi, where he protests to begin with, when he first heard about it, then you're right, everybody would agree. There's no argument that he's not koine. And if on the other hand he's first quiet and later on he protests, then then there's no question he was koineh, because to begin with he accepted it and later on he says not. So it means he would have to then give it away or be mafker it to somebody else if he doesn't want it in his possession anymore. Tosfos says that maybe once he protests, then maybe we would say that it becomes automatically hefker. But in any case, the point is,
we're talking still on the korbanos or something else?
We're talking no. Now we're not talking about korbanos. Now we're talking more generally. We're talking more generally when a person gives a gift to somebody else, and includes an eved, right? I'm just mentioning that in Krisos, it mentions the reason it brings up this point in Krisos of all places, which is a masech that has to do mostly with the details of korbanos chatos, is because you have that point over there. Okay. Anyway. So continues the Gemara. When is the machloikas Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim shezikolay ayde acher, where he was mezake him the eved through somebody else, the shosak of a soif tzavach, And he was quiet, and later on he protested. So now the question becomes, because it was through somebody else, the Tanakama Kaninu. The Tanakama says once he was quiet at the beginning, when it was through somebody else, and again we're talking about he was present there at the time. So the Shrivmara, let's say, the Shrivmara gave the document to Ruven and said, I want you to give it to Shimon. Shimon was there, he didn't protest. So therefore, so the Tanakama says, well, he didn't say anything, so therefore he was koina them. Now when he's protesting, Mehadahu to Kahdebe means he's trying to change his mind, and it's too late to change his mind. Because he was already kind of there.
On the case on the Gaten, the whole case is if the owner sent a shliach, shliach ki adam kumotai. So shliach also can signed by the owner.
That's something else. With a get, you have specific things involving shliach kabbalah and shliach halacha and all that. Fine. We're not getting into that level of detail. Hold on. We're not talking about the shliach doing anything over here. We're talking about the recipient saying, I don't want it. Now think of it. In the case of a get, for example, the case of a get is not really relevant to this. A wife has no ability to say, I don't want this get. Until Cherem Deh Ben Gershim, she could be divorced against her will, so therefore, so it's not. It's not even. Before Cherem Deh Ben Gershim, she doesn't even have that ability to not accept it. But whatever, anyway. Yeah. Anyway, going on. So the Tanakama will hold then that by the time he's Tseveach, by the time he protests, already too late. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, the fact that you see that at the end he protested shows that to begin with, he just figured, look, as long as it hasn't actually reached me yet, why should I protest? It's a gnai for me. It would be a shameful thing for me to start protesting something that hasn't even happened yet. So therefore, so he waits until he actually receives it, but he does actually mean to begin with that he doesn't want it. So now, therefore, so Vahaydalit Savachal, so Vahaydu, like Savach and Hashta, the fact that he didn't protest until now, just Savach, because he figures, Kilo Moti Liyodi, my at Savach, he figures, until it actually reaches my hand, until the Shtar, or whatever it is, reaches my hand, why should I protest? It seems silly to protest against something that may not even happen.
And when you say protest,
He just says, I don't want it.
We said the answer of that. So that would be why he doesn't want it.
So the point is, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, so again, so you have as follows. So if there was no third party involved, if it goes directly from the giver to the recipient, and again, the giver could be a Shchiv Mara, and potentially maybe according to some Rishonim, we could be talking about a body as well.
So
if he protests right away, then we said Shmuel says, so then Rabbi Yochanan says he's not koina. If he is quiet and accepts it first, and then later on, and what happens because he's not koina, there you have the Rashbam versus Tosfos, whether it means that it becomes hefker at that point, or as Tosfos says, it returns to the original giver. Or if he's quiet and accepts it, and later on he protests, then we have Shmuel saying he was already koneh anyway, and it's too late. If now he doesn't want it anymore, then according to the Rashbam, he would have to explicitly say, I'm giving it to somebody else, or I am making it hefker. And according to Tosfos, that may not be necessary. It'll become automatically hefker. Yeah. And then if it was done through a third party, then you have the Machlokas, Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. The Rashbam points out that usually we have a rule in the Gemara that the halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel. However, the Rashbam says that that rule applies only when it's in Mishnayos. This is a brisa we're talking about over here. So here the Rashbam says the halacha would actually be like the Chachamim. So according to the Rashbam, it would mean, in other words, that if it was Al Yedei Acher, if it was through somebody else, and Shosak Alot Seif Tzavach, then the result is, as the Chachamim say, it's too bad. He already was koinet, and it's too late to change his mind. The Rashbam is a Rishon who's explaining the Gemara over here. He took over where Rashi passed away and didn't complete his period. Right. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins like Rav Shimon Gamliel and says, at least in the case of Truma, that Kvar Zocha Behen Yoshin, and therefore that he doesn't eat Truma. So yeah. Fine. Another topic about Matana. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Shchiv merah she'ama tnuma sayim zuz l'ploini. If a shchiv merah, so he's very ill. He figures he's going to pass away soon. He says and the Rashbam points out that the reason why we're mentioning specifically a shchiv merah over here is because by a shchiv merah, we're going to be talking about over here a case where he says one after the other, give this amount to this person, this amount to this person, etc. So it's usual for a shchiv, it's usual for a shchiv merah to do that, as opposed to a body usually gives them individually. So let's learn the case and then we'll understand a little more why it's.
Before you go way deeper, just a small one, because you know the question here. Yeah. The shchiv merah we're talking about. How about if somebody that went quickly and he didn't know when he was going?
If he didn't know when he was going, well, then if he went without a will, then you have the usual rules of Yerusha, then you have the usual rules of inheritance that are outlined earlier in the Perek. All of this we're dealing with is where a person knows he's about to die, and therefore he's trying to take steps to give out his property the way that he wants. Yeah. Okay. So Tana Rabbanan, Shchiv Merah Shama Tshnu Masayim Zuz L'Ploini, a Shchiv Merah says, give 200 Zuz to Reuven, U'Shlosh Meis L'Ploini, and 300 to Shimon, V'Arba Meis L'Ploini, and 400 to Levi. Ein Omen Kol HaKodim B'Shtar Zocha, we don't say that the earlier the person is, the more of a right that he has to the money. Now, the Rashbam points out, first of all, if we're talking about a Shchiv Merah over here, it has to be that there's nothing left, because with a Shchiv Merah, we say that only when if he's giving out all of his possessions because he expects to die shortly, then we say we don't need a kinyan or anything. But if he's giving out only some of it and reserving some of it for himself, obviously he's not doing it because he expects to die soon, because look, he knows he can't take anything of it with him after 120. So then you need a kinyan. So here
what
we're talking
for? So on this case?
What?
Why you have to do Kenyan?
If he hadn't given out everything, if we're talking about if he was given 200, 300, and 400. So in other words, if he has a total, his total assets are 900 zuz, okay, and he's giving 200, 300, and 400, which is his entire assets, no Kenyan is necessary. But if no Kenyan is necessary, but if there was something else left, if he had 950 or 1,000 or whatever, then we would need a Kenyan for this to take effect. Here, when we're talking about there's no Kenyan, therefore it has to be that we're talking about he's leaving nothing over. And therefore, the Rashbam points out that now the point of the issue is going to be, does any of them have precedence over the other? If it was a bari, we would say very simple. A bari, a healthy person, is usually going to say very clearly, as separate statements, I want 200 to go to Reuven. Later on, he'll say, I want 300 to go to Shimon, etc. And then there's no question who gets first, because obviously he first gave to Reuven. Forget about Reuven. Forget about Bechorim a minute. We're talking about he's giving to various people. But the point is, with a body, usually we could expect, we know very clearly, Reuven has first acquired his 200, later on Shimon acquired his 300, and so forth. The whole point of the discussion over here is going to be that we can't be sure which one gets first, and therefore therefore it becomes more necessary to say that we're talking about a Shchiv Merah. We don't say whoever gets earlier in the shtar is the one who gets earlier, but rather we say that all of them are considered to be on the same level. So what does that mean? So it means, therefore, that if there's a debt involved, then we're going to collect proportionally from each one. Therefore, if there comes out a shtar choiv that he owes somebody money, goiva mikulam, then that bal choiv will be able to collect from all of them. Each one proportionally. The Shchiv Merah gave out 200 to Reuven, 300 to Shimon, 400 to Levi.
Yeah.
Then at some point we find that there's a shtar choiv where this Shchiv Merah had owed somebody money. So the Rashbam says, let's say, for example, he owes somebody 9 zuz.
Okay.
Well, then the guy is going to collect 2 from Reuven, 3 from Shimon, and 4 from Levi. Now, the Rashbam also points out that, now, if it was a shtar choiv, and we're talking about money over here, then the Yesomim don't have to pay with money or metaltlin anyway. Only their land is meshuvad. So the Rashbam says there's two possibilities. Either before they received the money, the shtar choiv came out, or we're talking about that when he says 200, 300, and 400, we don't mean money, but rather we mean land. And land of Yesomim is under a shibud to a bal choiv. So in other words, the point is, he obviously meant to give all of them on an equal level. But the fact is, he's only a human being. He can only say one word at a time. So therefore, now the Rashbam also adds, it would have to be he wasn't quiet in between. If he had said, 200 to Reuven. And later on, he rethought himself and said, you know what, and 300 to Shimon, and so forth. That would be different. Then we would say that is a case that the Gemara is going to talk about in the next perek, about what happens in that case. But in any case, the point is, here we say all of them are on an equal level. The Ramban makes an interesting point and says that this would only apply if they're getting different amounts, because then he has no choice but to mention Reuven, Shimon, and Levi separately. Let's say, for example, that he wanted to give each one of them 200, then he could just as well have said, I want Reuven, Shimon, and Levi to each get 200, and the fact that he didn't maybe shows that he wants Reuven to have precedence over Shimon, and Shimon to have precedence over Levi.
Levi, Shimon, Reuven, whatever the name will be, don't have enough to leave. And that's from the Chimera, whatever the will was.
Until now they didn't have what to live. Now they're receiving something. Some of it is going to have to go to the Baal Chayv. They're no worse off than they were before. So therefore, Aval Omer Tnuma Saim Zuz Leploini. But if he says give 200 to Ploini, the Achra of Leploini, and after him give to Shimon, the Achra of Leploini, and after him give to Levi, Omim Kolakodim Mishtau Zoicha. Then we do say whoever is earlier in the Shtau is Zoicha. Lefichach Yotza Olaf Shtau Choyv. Therefore, now if a Shtau Choyv comes out and has to be paid off, Govim and Achron, then he starts by collecting from the last one, from Levi, because when he goes to Reuven and Shimon, they can say, as the famous expression goes, "Hinachti l'chol makom ligbus hemenu." You have Levi is the Levi was the last recipient. When we received our portions, Reuven and Shimon, there was still some that still belonged to the Shchivmera, and he gave it to Levi last. So you should go and collect specifically from Levi. Ein loy, and if there's not enough, goyvim l'shalafonav, then he goes back to Shimon. Ein loy, and if he doesn't have enough either, goyvim l'shalafonav, then he goes back to Reuven, because there he clearly said achrav, meaning that it's going to be in that order: first Reuven, then Shimon, then Levi, as opposed to the previous case again, where he couldn't physically say all of them at the same time, and therefore we're saying that they're all considered on an equal level. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, Shchiv Menashe Amar Tnuma Saim Zuz Leploini Bni Bechor. What about if the Shchiv Menashe says, give 200 zuz to Ploini, my son who is the Bechor, Koro Iloi, as is suitable for him. Now, he doesn't need to say Koro Iloi, just saying give it to him, give to him as the Bechor is enough. Yeah. So when he says Koro Iloi, means he's adding something extra. It means he's doing a Yipui Koyach. He's improving his Koyach as far as what he's going to get. Namely, therefore, Noitlon. So therefore, he gets the 200 v'notel es bechorosay. In addition, he also gets his chelik bechora in the nechosim. So the 200 is above and beyond his chelik bechora.
The im omav. Write it on the wheel.
We're talking about a shchimera. You don't need to write down anything. On the other hand, if the father doesn't say koroi loy, if he says give him 200 zuz as his bechora, then it means then the bechor has the upper hand, meaning he has a choice in the matter. It's not that he's going to get both of them; it's one or the other, but he has the choice which one, whichever one is going to be better for him. Rotza noitlon, if he wants to take the 200 zuz, and that will then good. Rotza noitel bechorosa, and if he wants to get a schevik bechora, then he'll get that. Depends which one is depends which one is more, basically. Yeah. Now the Rashbam points out the father can't reduce the amount for the bechora. Lo yuchal avakeres ben ha'ahuva, as the pasuk says. So therefore, of necessity, the bechora is getting at least as much as his bechora. So therefore, when he says give him 200 zuz, then it can't mean that he's going to get less than his bechora. It means he's going to get at least as much as his bechora, and possibly more, depending whether the 200 is more or not. The point is that we're not going to say that if he said 200 and the chelik bechora would be 300, that he's only going to get 200, because that would be violating the rule that the father can't take away the bechora.
Right.
Now the Rashbam also adds that He also, if he says, what about if he doesn't say bivchorosa? What if he just says give 200 to my bachur? The same rule would apply. Also, yoda alo yoina. The point is, only when he uses the extra expression karoi loy, then we're saying that it means both. But the point is, even though he said bivchorosa, nevertheless, and you would think that means that maybe it means that he's limited only to that he's limited only that's capped at 200. No, we're saying the word bivchorosei means that he gets his bechorah, but it doesn't really matter whether the father had said bivchorosei or not. As long as he says give to Pliny 200, then it means that he's getting 200 or his bechorah, whichever is more.
His bechorah gets automatically.
Well, that's the point. In other words, that's the point. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. What about then if the Shchiv Menashe says, give 200 to Ploinis, my wife, as is suitable for her? So again, the word Karoi law is extra because as it is, she's supposed to be getting 200 for her Ksuba. Let's say we're talking about her basic Ksuba, where we know the basic Ksuba of Psula is 200. So let's say that's all there was. There was no Tosfos Ksuba, there was no Nichsin Malug, none of that. So yeah. So again, the same thing. The Talton, she gets the 200. Venetellus esksubasa. In addition, she collects oksuba because again, the word karoila means that point. The imama biksubasa. But if he says that I'm giving it to her as oksuba, same thing. Yoda ala yona. She has the upper hand. Rotsa ne Talton. If she wants, or rotsa, really, it's supposed to be in feminine form. If she wants, she collects the 200. If that's more, rotsa notellus ksubasa. And if she wants, she collects oksuba. Now that Ashbam does point out, you do have to assume that the case is where she wasn't moichel huksuba to him. Now it is possible for a wife to be moichel huksuba to her husband, and the Hagoyes Habach also adds, for example, we talked about a few days ago in the Gemara, you can have a case we learned last week where he made her a shutaf ben habonim, where he said that I'm giving you a portion equal to one of my children or parallel to one of my children, and we said or we said even if it was a smaller amount, whatever, then we can say she was moichel on the shibud of huksuba, and therefore she wouldn't necessarily now be able to collect it. But here we're talking about where there was no mechila or anything like that. So she's entitled to collect huksuba. But again, it depends whether he said karoi law or not.
Go ahead.
Okay. And she was
Moichel Ksuba,
then what happens there?
So then the Rashbam had learned actually in that sugya before about being Moichel Ksuba, the Rashbam had learned actually that it doesn't mean that she was Moichel at all together. It just means she was Moichel the Shibud on all of the Nechosim up until that point. If he gets any Nechosim later on, she will be able to collect from them. Practically speaking, we're talking here about a Shivana. He's not going to have a chance to get any more Nechosim before he dies. So in practice, she's not going to end up being able to collect Ksuba because the Shibud that she had on the Nechosim from before is gone. We learned there actually that the Rimi Gash had learned that it means that she has entirely forfeited her ksuba, even from the chosin he gets later on. But again, that's more relevant by a body, by a shchiv mara. Here it's not necessarily as relevant. Be that as it may, yeah, the point is she may not be able to collect her ksuba. But here, where he told her that she's entitled to 200, that she's entitled to 200, and biksubasa, or whether he said biksubasa or not, either way, she's getting the 200 or the ksuba, whichever is more. Yeah.
Jack, one thing to add,
yeah.
Because you mentioned that if the wife was Mochel or Ksubasa, I would take the gift. But what is the opposite? I mean, the wife was not guilty. And
it's not a question of guilty. Not a question. Wait one second.
No,
who's talking about guilt?
Talking about the money in Ksuba.
No, we're not talking about guilty over here. We're talking about that she can be moichel on her ksuba. She can say to them, it means that she forgives her husband. She's saying, in other words, I'm foregoing my rights to the ksuba.
That means whatever, the husband is happy and he goes well without nothing, without giving anything on the ksuba. That's not of her. I'm just saying the opposite, like they didn't want, I mean, the Baal was guilty and not the wife.
Again, I don't know what I'm not sure what guilty. I'm not sure too sure what guilty you're talking about. But you know,
no,
hold on. Let's discuss this later. This is all Gemara is not. Okay.
Thank you.
The short answer is that if the husband doesn't want to pay his ksuba, then he has to pay it whether he likes it or not. But
thank you very much. Okay, fine.
That's right. Similarly, a third case, Shchiv Menashe says, give 200 zuz to Pliny to whom I owe money, karoi loy, as is appropriate for him. Then he collects them plus his debt, because again, the karoi loy means that he's giving him something extra. But if he says, give it to him as his debt, then he just gets the amount And then he gets the amount for his debt. There are actually different girsos of Rishonim over here. The Rif has a girsa that he just collects his debt, meaning unlike in the previous two cases where the Bechor or the wife has the right to collect the larger amount of the 200 or of the thing, here the Rif's girsa is that all he gets is his choiv. The Rosh has a girsa, Yada Alel Yona, that would be similar to the other ones, that he gets the large, whichever amount that he wants. And the Ritva discusses it and says, you know, it's one thing by Bechor and his wife. He loves them and he wants to give them. But Ayin Yofa, you can't say that by a Baal Chov, plus the fact that you have concerns about Ribis. So on the other hand, the Yad Ramah says that maybe it's not such an issue. So maybe he may well mean that there are other debts that he owes that the guy has long since forgotten about or whatever. So therefore, maybe it's not such a problem for him to get. Now, so we've said three cases where we say because he says karoi loy, then we're adding something extra. So first the question is. Well, so that's the question. So you're telling me because he says karoi loy, then he collects that plus his debt. The duma karoi loy b'choyve karmer. How do we know? Maybe it means what he deserves as his debt. And really, the same question would kind of be on the other ones as well, as far as the ksuba and as far as the b'chor. So, in fact, the Rabbeinu Gershom points out that, yeah, the Gemara could have asked it on the previous ones, but we finished with the case of the Baal Choyv, so therefore we ask specifically on that. And there are Rishonim who say that, no, again, given that when it comes to a Bechor or his wife, he feels more close to them, so therefore we can assume that Karoi Loi means to add something extra of a Baal Choyv, where he doesn't have such warm feeling just to him, the Rimigash, the Yad Ramah points out, therefore the Gemara is bothered by why should we say that just by saying Karoi Loi means he's giving him something extra. So the answer is, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Li Huna, Rav Nachman says that Huna, which is to say Rav Huna, they were colleagues, so he just calls him by his first name, says, Homani Rav Akiva, this Braisa that we just quoted is specifically according to Rav Akiva, the Dayak Lishni Yisera. Where Rabbi Akiva is medayik, he says when a person uses extra words, then it means that he's giving something extra, namely, and therefore in this case, the fact that he's using the extra words karoi loy means that he's adding something extra. The Tanan, namely, we learned earlier in our Masechta that when a person sells, for example, a house, loyas veloyas habur veloyas adus, with the house, he's not automatically selling a bur or dus that are inside the house, as we learned then. A bur is an underground. So either we said that either a bur is underground or a dus is above ground, or actually that Ashbam had learned over there that both the bur and the dus are underground, but the bur is not lined with bricks or stones, and the dus is. Whatever the case, they're considered to be something important independent of the house. So when he sells the house and doesn't specify that he's including those, then they're not included. And the Mishnah had continued, the afapisha kosavale umkavaruma, even if the seller writes in the shtar that I'm selling you the depths and the heights of the house, it still doesn't include that. What it means is that the guy has ground rights and air rights of the house. It means he has the right, for example, to do, if he digs underground the house and finds a buried treasure over there, like in all the stories, he'll be able to keep it. Without writing umka, he wouldn't. Right? With ruma, it means, for example, that he can build more stories on top of the house. Or we mean if somebody wants to fly a plane over there, then he can charge the guy a fee for that. But without Ruma, he wouldn't be able to do that. But the point is, in other words, one second. But it still doesn't mean that he acquires a bur or a dus, which are considered an independent thing within the house. And the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Akiva says in that case that the seller of the house would have to buy from the buyer a right of way to be able to go to the borer of the dus, given that he still retains ownership of the borer of the dus. If he wants it, if he wants to be able to get to it, and he doesn't want to be, for example, like that woman with her bibi ba baya with the tree that we learned about yesterday in the Gemara, then he's going to have to buy himself a pathway to there. Chum say he doesn't need to, because we discussed over there moicher b'ayin yofa, moicher b'ayin ra, moicher, is he selling more generously or more stingily? Anyway, umoide Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva agrees, bizman sh'omalei chutz me'elu, if he explicitly says, I'm selling you the house but not the bur or not the dus, that he does not have to buy a path there, because by mentioning, he wouldn't have had to say it, even without mentioning it, the bur or the dus are not included. Alma, therefore we see Rabbi Akiva holds, kiven deloit sorich, since he doesn't need to say that extra word, the ka'omar, and he says, chutz me'elu, l'tafuya milsa ka'osi, then it means that he's coming to add something extra. Tochinami, the same thing over here. Kivin deloit sorich, he didn't need to say the words karoi loy, and if he said, give 200 to my baal choyv, the same thing would work. The ka'omar, and he says that, l'tafuya milsa ka'osi, therefore we can say he comes to add something extra, and therefore that in fact baal choyv is going to get the 200 plus his choyv. The Rashbam points out, by the way, one second, the Rashbam points out that really when we say over here that this is according to Rabbi Akiva, it's very possible that actually the Chachamim would agree in this case. We find clearly Rabbi Akiva is darshaning from the extra Loshen. The Chachamim are saying either way he's getting a path there, because Moicher b'ayin ra Moicher, and he intends to hold back for himself, and he intends to reserve for himself the path. So as far as they're concerned, it doesn't matter whether he said Chutz Me'elu or not, either way it's going to have the same din. Rabbi Akiva is the one making that distinction. So we see Rabbi Akiva clearly holds that the extra wording is meant to add something extra that he wouldn't otherwise have had. But the Chachamim may well agree with that underlying concept, which would mean in our Gemara over here that if he says Karoi Loi, even the Chachamim would agree that the other guy gets the 200 plus whatever it is that he's supposed to get.
By the pathway also?
No, not by the pathway. By the pathway, the Chachamim was saying anyway, Mercha Bayin Ra Mercher, and he anyway. If he said, according to the Chachamim, he wouldn't need to say Chutz Me'elu in order for himself to reserve himself the path. Either way, he has himself the path. He does have, according to them, by saying Chutz Me'elu, he's not adding anything extra that he wouldn't have otherwise had. Yeah. What?
I'm sorry. I love your point.
It's fine.
Whatever I have to say is, when I have a house, and this is my house,
mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to sell cheap, I'm not trying to sell this, I'm in the middle. Why I cannot? Sell my bow.
If you want to include your bow, if you want to sell your bow, there's nothing preventing you. You're right in the shire. They're saying I'm selling you my house along with the bow. Okay. But we're saying if he says by default, if he just says I'm selling you my house and he doesn't specify, then we're saying the bow is not.
If
he didn't specify. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, Shchiv Merah she'om a mona yeshli eitz ploini. If a Shchiv Merah says that I owe a mona to that ploini owes me a mona, her edim koisvin, then edim who hear the Shchiv Merah saying that can write the document and say that they're writing is a memorandum. They're writing like a record of the fact that the Shchiv Merah said this. Afterwards, we're gonna have to take it to Beis Din, of course. Afa pisha ein makirin, and they can do that even if they don't know." Even if they don't recognize who that person is, who that ploiny is, or they don't know whether in fact he actually owes the money, because they're not writing that we know that he owes him money. All they're writing is we're recording that this Shchiv Merah said such and such. We want to have an official record of it. So they can write even if they don't know him. Leficha k'shu goyva. Therefore, when the Shchiv Merah or his yoshim are going to want to collect on that. Then they're going to have to bring a proof. They're going to have to bring a proof that, in fact, what a Shchiv Merah says is valid as far as what he's giving out his own nechosim. Obviously, we don't take as a given everything that a Shchiv Merah says. So they're going to have to bring a raya. They're going to have to bring edim or whatever that he actually. Yeah, because again, the edim are not saying that we're testifying that he actually owes him the money. All the edim are doing are saying we're testifying that Pliny said such and such. Divrei Reb Meir. That's what a mayor says. V'chum say to begin with, they can't even write that memorandum unless they know the facts, because we're concerned about a Beis Din toyim. We're concerned that a Beis Din may get a hold of this document and they may misunderstand. They may think, well, wait, we have a record over here that says that where Reuven and Shimon are signing that we heard that Pliny owes Pliny money, and they're going to think that it means that he actually owes it to him. So we have the concept, in fact, that when Edim sign a shtar nasik mishnechra idusin bebeistin, we consider as though their testimony has already been validated in Beis Din. So the Chum say they have to know the facts first, and only then can they write the shtar. Lefichach, therefore, k'shu goyva in sarach l'aviraya. Later on, when the Shchiv Merah or his heirs are going to collect, they don't have to bring a raya because we already have a valid document signed by Edim. So then it'll be the other way around. If the guy is going to claim that it was forged or whatever, it's up to him to start bringing, he can claim that it was forged or whatever, he's gonna have to bring Raya's for that. But yeah, okay. So the Gemara says,
this document has to go through Bezdin or not?
No, that's what it was. Well, I mean, so practically speaking, it's going to have to go to Bezdin, because otherwise, how are you going to force him to comply with it? But
when you make it up, you don't have to. That's the problem.
Right. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Nachman. So again, Rav Nachman says, Omer li Huna. So Huna, again, Rav Huna told me, maybe that's why the Gemara is bringing this in over here, because it's another example where Rav Nachman points out a detail that Rav Huna explained to him. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Meir Omer Ein Kosvin, that there's a braisa that says the other way around. Rav Meir says they can't write unless they know the facts. The Chum say they could write it. But after Rav Meir loy Omar, because even Rav Meir is not saying really that you can't write it. Elam Shum based in Toyin. But again, because of this concern of based in Toyin. Really, Rav Meir should have agreed with the Chachamim in the second braisa and said, look, the Shchiv Merah himself doesn't have the opportunity. It's too late for him to go and start demanding from the loyve. He's about to die. But Rav Meir is concerned about a based in Toyin. That a Beis Din may misunderstand that the shtar, which is meant to be only a record of what the Shchiv Merah says, that they're going to think it's an actual shtar chayv saying that he owes him money.
They might think that.
They see two Edim or sign on it.
The family?
We're saying that the family may misunderstand. And a Beis Din may misunderstand.
Good.
So the Gemara says, Omer Abdimi Minahouda in Hilchsa in Choshen Beis Din Toyin. But Abdimi Minahouda says, no, we're actually not concerned the halacha about a Beis Din Toyin. And therefore, the halacha would be that they would be able to write down this fact that he said it. And we don't have to be concerned. So in other words, we would accept Rav Nachman's version of what the Chachamim say, the Chachamim Kosvin, because again, Rav Meir is only disagreeing because of the concern of based in Toyin. Rav Dimi Minahouda is saying we're not worried about based in Toyin, so therefore that's it. We can write, and then they're going to write down that the Duchron, they're going to say a memorandum that Pliny, the Shchiv Merah, told us that Pliny owes him a money, and then afterwards, we'll bring that to based in, and based in will say, okay, now you Yoshim have to bring a proof that in fact he does actually owe him. You have this statement that your father made. Now go look for Edim or Shtar or whatever, and then get to the bottom of it.
On which case, Rav?
In this case, where he's saying that Pliny owes me a money.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the question is, Umay Shnomid Rava. Well, you're saying that the Edim can write it even without knowing whether the facts are true, because they're just writing down what he said. But why is it different from a case that Rava said, the Amar Rava, Ein Chiltzin Elim Kein Makirin? Rava says when it comes to chalitza, the Beis Din can oversee a chalitza only if we know who they are, only if we know that they are a Yavam and Yavama.
For sure.
Because again, we're concerned about based in Toyin. We're concerned about that a based in might mistakenly, so what's going to happen? In other words, the first based in is going to write out afterwards, after a chalitza, typically based in writes out a document saying that this woman has received chalitza and is now free to remarry. So if they write out such a document, then again, you may have a Beis Din Toyin is gonna see, well, wait, you know, we have, they're going to think, well, the first Beis Din wouldn't have done it unless they knew that this was a Yavam and Yavama. So then in that case, we can take it to the bank, and then they're going to give her permission to remarry, and they don't realize that. So the Beis Din themselves has to be able to recognize it. The Ein Mamayin and Ein Elim Kein Makirin. Similarly, when it comes to Miyun, can be done only if the Beis Din recognizes the parties. Miyun is where a girl was married off by her mother or brothers or whatever when she was a Ktana, and now she has the ability, as long as she's a Ktana, to say, Eini Roitza, I don't want to be married to this guy anymore, and the marriage is dissolved, and it's as if it never took place.
The age of Ktana
for this purpose is anything under Bas Mitzvah, or technically until she receives state status.
She doesn't go with her husband at that time. She goes to her husband when she's 17.
No.
Correct. No. You can marry her. Marry someone at 12 or 13.
She can be married. She can be married even. She can be married in principle even as a baby. What's going to happen as far as? Yeah. So then we're fine. The halacha, the father has the right to be makadisher even when that is valid daraisa. If her father is dead, then her mother, her brothers can do it midrabanan. But then she has this out with me.
Sure.
Technically, when she's below a certain age, she doesn't even need me, and she just goes home, and that's that. She has to be like above six, between 6 and 10 years old to even require me. And then she has that window of opportunity until she's bas mitzvah, or strictly speaking, until she develops shei sairis. Anyway, whatever.
Exactly.
The point is that in that case also, you in that case, generally it's 12. But yeah. Yeah, generally it's 12, but yeah. In any case, the point is that Beis Din has to be able to recognize her. Now, the Rash, there's an interesting discussion among Rishonim. Is it necessary for them to recognize both of them? The Rashba makes a point. They need to recognize her, because otherwise you don't want some random girl is going to come in and do miyun, and it's not her marriage b'chlal, and she's messing up somebody else's marriage. But on the face of it, the Rashba says, if we know who she is, then we can trust that she's talking about her actual husband, and therefore that should be that. We don't need to know that the person she's speaking of is in fact her husband. On the other hand, the Magid Mishnah says not necessarily, because you still might have. There might be, for example, somebody else in town who has the same name as her husband, and that's going to cause problems. Anyway, the point is, so therefore, so Rava says in those cases, we do have to know them before we can do anything. The result is that after the chalitza or after the miyun, when it comes to writing down a document afterwards saying that this chalitza or this miyun took place, then we can write it, even if the Edim don't know who these people are, because they can trust that Beis Din knew who they were. So the question is, so we see that they were concerned about, so the question is, my timer, now why would Rava be saying that they have to recognize them? On the face of it, because we're concerned about a future Beis Din making a mistake. Meaning, in other words, again, if you don't require the first Beis Din to recognize them when it comes to the chalitza or the miyun, what's going to happen is the first Beis Din is going to have the chalitza done. They're going to write, the Edim are going to write out a document saying that it was done. That document is going to wind up in the hands of another Beis Din who doesn't know that the first one didn't investigate who these people are, because they didn't know that halacha. And now they're going to allow her to remarry, and that's a problem. So we see we are concerned for Beis Din Toyin. The words my time alive, by the way, are in parenthesis. The Rashbam has them, meaning, in other words, that the Gemara is Rava has made his statement, and now the Gemara is asking that on the face of it, it's because Chayshin and the Beis Din Toyin. On the other hand, Tosfos does not have those words, meaning that Rava understands the words Mishum de Chayshin and the Beis Din Toyin are all part of Rava's own statement. In any case, the point is that Rava himself, so we're saying, that Rava is saying we're concerned about a Beis Din Toyin, Dimi Minahavda was saying that not, and that the halacha is not. Now, of course, the Gemara could easily answer, look, Rav Dimi and Rava are both Amoroim, they can argue with each other. But since the Gemara often uses this, that since Rava was an exceptionally great Amora, so we assume the halacha is going to be like him, and we don't want to have, and here Rav Dimi Minahavda is saying flatly, the halacha is, we're not concerned about a Beis Din Toyin, so we seem to have a contradiction over here. So the Gemara answers, Loi. The difference is so the difference is that it's not a contradiction. Based in Bosa based dinner loy daiki. One based in is not necessarily going to be medayik after another one. When you have, in the case of chalitza or miyun, when the document states that this thing was done in front of the based in, the chalitza or the miyun, if a different based in gets a hold of that document, they're going to think the first based in must have investigated the matter thoroughly, and therefore we can rely on them, and they're not going to realize, yeah, but the first based in may not have known who these people are, and therefore we have a document that says that Ploni and Plonius did chalitza, and it's no good because they're not actually who they claim they were. Therefore, the first Beis Din has to make sure that they investigate the matter and know who these people are, and then that way there's no concern that a later Beis Din will fail to check up on it. Beis Din abasa edim daiki, but a Beis Din will check up when you have something that was only written by edim. Here we're talking about the shivman I said in the presence of edim that Ploni owes me a mana. So we don't. So a Beis Din, when they see that, they're not going to think to themselves, "Well, the Edim must have known all the facts." It's only Edim; it's not a Beis Din. So therefore, they're going to realize, you know what? We better check up on the facts, and therefore, it's fine. We can write the document, even if the Edim don't know who that Pliny is, or that in fact he owes the money. Because by the time the document reaches Beis Din, they will check out the facts, and they will make sure that it is in fact a valid claim before they allow the Yoshim to collect it from that guy. So that's the difference. Okay.